This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today I am with...
Peggy.
And I am Stuart Burks. Okay, now you were saying you've had an interesting life.
Oh, I don't know about it being terribly interesting, but it's a life, as it was then. And I suppose my first memories would be... at about four in Rahutu, when things were so different then. And I think the first one perhaps was walking with my grandmother from the farmhouse up Nareki Road. And we probably walked, I don't know, a couple of kilos, and with four-year-old legs, you just did that. You didn't question it. No ringing a taxi or anything like
this
that.
This was about 1937.
This would be 37, say,
roughly around
about that time, to catch the bus at the end of the road.
You had to walk 2 kilometres to catch the bus?
Yes. And getting from the farmhouse out to the gate would be quite a distance, and that would just be a grass paddock, of course. It's a guess.
It was
2 kilometres.
Okay.
It was quite a long step that you would normally catch a bus for today, but we couldn't get the bus until we got to the end of Nareki Road to go into Opunaki. That was with my grandmother and getting my first storybook, I think, about the three kittens losing their mittens, and that was a big deal for me. So, of course, I couldn't read at that time, but I just learned it by rote, I guess. And, I can remember, that's one of the first memories. And, of course, on the farm we had a little Ford truck, not straight away, but it was that was a novelty. And riding on the dray with my uncle in Tikiri to go to the factory, with the big milk cans.
Oh, okay. So you were on a dairy farm and they...
We were on a dairy farm, and my uncle also was on a dairy farm in Taranaki. That's a different farm, of course. But standing on the dray there with him was good fun with these big drums. You wouldn't get away with it today, health and safety.
Yes,
But that was as it was then. Not that he had to go far for the factory, because that was just next door.
Yeah. Were you part of a large family? You did it with brothers and sisters
four
as well?
Four children, and I was the baby, the youngest.
Okay. Yeah.
Spoiled? I just joke about that, because I don't think there was time for spoiling in those days. Parents were busy milking cows.
Yeah.
And raising children.
Yeah. Did you do things on the farm? You did.
Oh yes, as we got. That was quite interesting. Not until later in life, when there was the necessity to give a hand, and that was. And I can jump ahead there when I suppose I was about 10 or something. My brother and I. And sister actually milked a small herd of cows on our own.
Yeah.
At many times when Dad was away, and that was when the family was broken up, and we were left on the farm on our own to cope with two or three milkings.
Yes.
And my brother, I think, was 14 then, and he used to operate the. There was no electricity on the farm. He used to operate the pump. And I think on one occasion he came pretty close to, I believe, getting a bit tangled up in the pump. So
how was that powered?
Pardon?
How is it powered? How is the pump?
Motor.
Yeah.
Motor. Yes, that was, there was no, as I say, no.
Oh, a petrol or diesel motor. Yeah.
I don't know, actually. Okay. It was a pump.
Yeah.
That I, okay. I mean, I was only, I was 12 at that time.
Okay.
So, but he used to start the pump up and get the milking machine going and send the dog out to get the cows. And I can remember he did the stripping, you know, that was supposed to be the man's job, and I thought I was missing out on something.
The stripping?
The stripping. Oh, you've stripped cows then, before you put, or after, after. So I got the job as a 12-year-old there, washing the cow's teats and tying the tail back, leg, and there was a rope that went around the back of them, and you know, I think you tied one leg back, I'm not sure about that, and put the cups on.
Okay.
So we were able to do that.
So what is stripping, though?
Well, that was after the machines had been on the cow, and you took them off manually, not like some of the automatic controlled ones today. You took the cups off and then stripped the last amount of milk out.
Ah, okay.
Otherwise, supposedly, the cows were got an infection.
Yes, okay.
I forget the name of it.
Mastitis.
Mastitis, yes. Okay. So, at that time, it made us very independent.
Okay. So was that quite an unusual situation? You said your father left, did he? Or?
Yeah, that was as it was for us.
Yes.
My mother had found a new partner, and we knew no different. That was accepted.
Okay, so the new partner just became your stepfather?
I never looked on him as my stepfather.
Yeah.
He was Mum's partner and husband.
Okay. So how was that treated in the society or in the school?
I don't honestly know. It was as it was for us, and we just accepted it.
Were you in a small country school? Was it a small community that you were in?
We were only on that particular farm for a short period of time. So I was having correspondence lessons at that time. And, of course, I don't think many of them got done. So, but... Yeah, I'm just making these comments because it just was so different. Not the normal, but not abnormal, I would imagine, because I think war perhaps was part of the...
Oh, so, yeah, it was during the war that this happened, or towards the end of the war.
Oh, yes, because we had, first of all, I think... we had come down to Palmerston from moved from the country into New Plymouth, and New Plymouth was just a village then, just so different, I mean, from today. And then we moved down to Palmerston North when Dad was in the army, went into the army, and I think that pleased him to go into the army because. Depression days, well, I think they just got over the depression days or just getting through them still, maybe. And I think by many people the war was looked on as a little bit of excitement, a change from the normal depression years of things being very difficult.
So did your father go overseas?
No. He didn't. I think he was on a ship, I believe he was on a ship on his way, but was recalled because he had four dependent children. Or I think at that time, my older sister may have been out working, so he still had three dependent children. And I believe that the young men were conscripted first. And then a man, married man with one child, two children, three children, so it went on.
Okay.
Were eligible to be conscripted.
And then it was shortly after that that the marriage ended?
Yes, I think it was. It's hard to get things in my mind in order, but I think it was. And
what were the arrangements then? I mean, now there's a lot of issues of custodial and non-custodial parents and access and so on. Did you still have a lot of contact with your father?
I don't think there was any amount of custodial, no SIPs.
Yes.
None in those days.
So you do. It was just however you arranged it.
However it was arranged, and I wanted to stay in New Plymouth area and go to my favourite school. That was really the only thing that I hung on to as a child. The only thing I felt was right for me.
So you had a group of friends and you just wanted to stay?
I think I was very much a loner.
Okay.
I think that's what life, as it was, it seemed to cultivate in me.
Yes. So you were late, you had to travel into New Plymouth to go to school?
Well, I originally, I was with various people boarding. So it didn't give me roots.
Okay.
And it didn't overly concern me too much at that time. Little things did. But comparing that, I would say, with the children today, when there's so much more influence put on and so much more on the children to be, how can I put it, to be emotional, and needing medications to get them through the various emotional upheavals that seem to be encouraged in kids today. It wasn't then.
Did many people know about your situation? If you were boarding at school, did they know about your family situation?
I don't know. I really don't know. I didn't develop roots because I was... as I say, boarding with different ones. Dad wasn't in a position to have me, although I did stay with him in quite unsuitable, an unsuitable situation. So it just made me very independent. I think, on one occasion where I was living with a family. I think I might have been about 12, just over 12 or nearly 13. I actually was helping in the house before I went to school. And I, the woman of the house, I think, had a big operation and wasn't able to do things, so I was quite capable to get up and make beds and mop a couple of floors and that before I went to school, and then catch two trams to get to my favourite school, and that was fine. I had to tram into New Plymouth and then catch another one to go out to Fitzroy. So that's just as it was, and so I didn't get the cosseting as a child that that some do, and I don't believe it did me any harm.
Yes.
Particularly. Yeah, there were times when I realised that things were a little different for me, but that was it.
So did you see your mother a lot then?
I went over to her for school holidays, and at one stage, but I'd come back to New Plymouth for the schooling. Yes, I had holidays over there, and then started working over there actually before I was even 15, until I understand the school authorities caught up with me.
Ah, okay.
Or caught up with my parents and decided, I had to go to school. So I didn't want to go to school in Hastings, where I had worked. My pride wouldn't let me do that.
Yeah, okay.
So
you were very independent then. You were,
pardon?
You were very independent then. At 15 you went over to Hastings and started working?
Oh, no, I was only 13.
Or 13?
Not 14. That's why. And I should have been at school till I was
15. So you just went by yourself over to...
Decided that I had gone back to New Plymouth to start high school. And the living situation that I was in at that point wasn't... I'd gone over there for a holiday, actually, and started work.
Okay, in Hastings.
Because my stepfather wouldn't have me there without I was earning some money.
Okay. So your mother was in Hastings?
Oh, yes. She was there with her partner. And so I had to work over the holidays and earn my board. So that was fine. But then I went back to New Plymouth to start school and decided the school part, I loved school and loved learning, but the living situation wasn't good and I decided working was better.
Okay.
So I went back to Hastings.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I travelled around on my own. And and went back to the job that I had in a milk bar. And getting off the subject of me, I think I'm...
Yeah, sure. Okay,
the milk bar then, where they were called milk bars, was ice cream. The only meals you could get then were spaghetti on toast, baked beans on toast, poached eggs, scrambled eggs, that kind of thing, hamburger buns. And I remember I went into the job not having a clue about how to cook. I just had to watch and see what the others were doing. So I would imagine a few people got some funny poached eggs at times.
Okay.
Nobody complained, I don't think, or not to me.
And that was a main focal point for young people, was it?
Not so much young people.
Okay.
You went with parents.
Okay.
Or an adult. It wasn't a place that young people would congregate. I think the young people then congregated more at the dance hall on a Saturday night. That was, and too, in the country in those days, everybody went to the dance at night. The older people sat in the supper room playing cards or something, or sat and chatted. And the young, very young children would scoot round the dance floor in between the dances and, you know, slide around. And that's what happened in the country. But one of my other memories, I think, is once again during the war with the young men having their final leaves. And that was in the form of a get-together in the country hall. With beautiful homemade cooking. And just a big community, family get-together.
They were going in groups, would they, or individually?
They were families. Either.
But the young men who were going overseas, you'd have a send-off for a group of them?
Quite often, I think, it was singularly that they were called up for and knew it was their final leave. That then they would be, perhaps they would be in the country, no doubt, for some time. The ships went out unknown and unknown times for safety reasons. I think they were called up usually singularly, and it would be a farewell for such and such, or some other young man of another family.
And what was the feeling about those? Was it excitement or worry or
Well, sadness? I think a bit of both, probably. families, of course, were very sad, and the young men too. But I think, yes, there probably would have been some anticipation about what it's all about. But, I mean, little did people know some of the situations they found. Gallipoli, for instance, I believe was a tragedy. And, of course, me as a young person, very young, I really had no idea how close we were to the Japanese invading. I was aware of ration books and, you know, think food and things being rationed and blackouts and different things that were mentioned here on one other recording about the wardens coming around and calling out if there was a flicker of light showing and building the dugouts in the bottom of the garden, which really were useless. Well, ours was anyway. So, I think young people then, of course, mostly grew up much more independent than today, because their input into family farms and businesses was far greater and more expected of the young people than today. I mean, you see so much labour wasted in the young people. They're not encouraged to sometimes to pull their weight.
Well, I think if there aren't family businesses, so then in when you were young, there'd be a lot of smaller businesses, small family farms and shops and so on, whereas now it's more sort of large organisations and people having careers. So it's probably a bit different.
Far different. But young people expected and was necessary. Very necessary to be involved in whatever, and to go out and do paper runs and milk runs at a very early age to get their own pocket money. They weren't paid pocket money. It's wonderful to be able to look back see how things were.
And you spent time in Palmerston North as well.
During the war. And then, of course, I came to live here in about 1950 and got married here. And,
So it was still quite small when you came. In 1950, was Palmerston North a small place? Or?
So different. You could have sat on the on the middle of the roadway at Terrace End and been quite happy there, perhaps with the odd car passing by. I know my husband used to come home for lunch from the bottom end of Rangitiki Street and do it with ease.
Is that in a car?
In a car. But you could have done it on a push bike, I'm sure. But not today. You wouldn't do that so easily with all the traffic lights and the hold-ups.
Were the roads all paved then?
Yes. The city roads, and probably the footpaths were in a better condition then than what they are around here, that's for sure. A few of them in this area. But where we lived, down the bottom of Ruaheni Street, it was a very rough piece of road from the corner of Ruaheni, and I think it went, Ruaheni went round to Franklin, turned off Ruaheni into Franklin. Well, from that point right down to nearly Manawatu Street was rocky. And trucks used to, I know when I was pushing a pram, trucks used to go past me, and of course they were always considerate too, because they slowed down because of the dust factor. Here I was pushing a pram with everything, you know, spick and span. Pram, everything. So they obviously showed a lot of consideration. So, but nevertheless, no footpath there.
And that was that mainly new houses being built at that stage?
At that time, there were a sprinkling of older places, a very small sprinkling. But the odd new house was being built. But now, of course, totally different. It's built out and subdivided and, so different. And, of course, but first of all, to get a comparison there, I revert to a few years before when I was boarding with a family out at Milson. No telephone. There was a telephone box. I think there was a telephone. There was a telephone box round at the one or two shops that were there, but people didn't have a telephone.
So you could ring out, but it would be hard to.
You had to in those days. You had to either go to the telephone box in the middle of the night if it was necessary, put a penny in it. I guess I think it was a penny then, and or if a neighbour had a phone. Go and knock them up in the middle of the night if that was what was necessary. And
so you would only use phones for emergency calls?
Certainly in the house that I was in, mind you, it was a railway house. So they hadn't invested in a phone, and it wasn't common to have a phone, let alone a car.
So there wouldn't be too many people that you could phone anyway.
Oh, no. I had no necessity to use a phone except at work. And I remember my mother, whenever she wanted to ring me from Hastings, you had, in those days, you had to go to the post office and lodge a call and wait for it to come through.
So there's no privacy either, was there?
I think you went into, if you did that at the post office, you did go into a cubicle, but I can't ever remember using a phone that way. But I know that was the idea then. They didn't. Mum didn't have a phone. Mum and her partner didn't have a phone, so that's what she had to do.
So how did you normally keep in contact with your family? Was that through letters or
letter? A letter or a visit. So, that was, a letter or visit.
Okay. So would you travel a lot?
I did all school holidays. I used to, right from a very early age, probably 9 or 10, probably 10, in those days you had to catch a bus in New Plymouth. I think I had to change twice.
And you travel on your own?
Yes.
Was there any control or anyone overseeing you when you were travelling?
No, I think possibly my father put me on the bus in New Plymouth and I would travel to, or on the train. If it was a train, it would take me, but I think it was buses because that was the easier connection for me. A bus to Palmerston North and then catch a White Star. Or sometimes I think I had to go change at Whanganui and then again at Palmerston North. And I know on one occasion, I think it was on my 13th birthday, I was going over to a possum camp where Mum and Frank were at the time.
A possum camp?
A possum, a possum campsite where he was, because in those days he got, the government would pay so much.
Oh, it was
for
people who were skinning possums. Yeah.
Skinning possums. Okay. And I was to, I went to, got to Hastings and I probably changed at Whanganui. Into a White Star bus, into a Newman's bus from there. Stayed the night with my mum's partner's sister. And then I was to travel on in to the possum camp, but the bus didn't go that far. They obviously didn't know that. Mm. It only went to Wairoa. Mm-hmm. So there I was stuck in Wairoa. Mm. Only by the good grace of the driver, I stayed at his place for tea, and then he knew where the camp yeah. was, you see.
Uh-huh.
So he drove me after tea
yeah.
to the campsite.
Oh, that was nice.
So, yeah, you know, these things, kids, I think kids would still be very capable of doing it today, given the opportunity, but that's as it was, and that was accepted.
Yeah, I think now they think it's probably too risky for...
Oh, too risky today, but then it was a bit risky then, too.
Yeah, I suppose.
So, but it sure made one...
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.